Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the Zero Point Radio Show through BBS Radio. It is Saturday, May 26, 2011. This has been an ongoing show through BBS Radio for 6 to 7 years now, and we explore mystical and spiritual psychologies and teachings, as well as science, as well as political and social issues. Today we have a fascinating guest on, and I'll let Dee introduce our guest in a few minutes. And we'll have a good long time with her, an hour and a half almost. And then I'm going to come back and take the last 15 to 20 minutes of the show because I want to review some of the things I'm doing myself and explain some of my current activities. This coming Friday, June 1st, I'm heading off across Canada to attend the Vancouver 9/11 Truth Conference and getting to present my original research on the fabled airplanes and scripted witnesses of 9/11. So I'm taking, for me, a month away. In my next two shows, I'll be on the road during that time. And Dee and I, we still have to work out all the arrangements about those shows. But I'll continue to, while I'm on the road, to be at least part of the shows. So I'm going, for me, it's a little bit of a vision quest to go across Canada and to go to Vancouver, and then I hope to do some camping on Vancouver Island and hope to be back at home by July 8th because my son's getting married July 14th, and I want to be there for my marriage of my eldest. So I've got some interesting activities and adventures ahead, a little personal vision quest, and for me it fills the need to kind of move and travel once again. I've just gotten through the anniversary of my death of my sweetheart and feel I need to get away and spend some time in nature and do some camping and explore the world again. Also, as I travel across Canada, over the last months, my main activity has been producing little videos on chemtrail poisoning, and I did a 10-minute YouTube video on the chemtrail poisoning of the citizens of Ottawa, and now I've produced a half-hour video on the chemtrail poisoning of the citizens of Kempville, which is where I live, Kempville, Ontario. And this last 2 weeks ago, I took a copy of my videos and gave them to the city council, just to try to alert people to, you know, what is this phenomenon? What's behind this terrible chemtrail spraying? So that's another of my concerns. And as I travel across Canada, I hope by the fall to be able to produce a movie called The Chemtrail Poisoning of the Citizens of Canada, because I will likely observe chemtrails across Canada, but we'll see. So I have those things coming up, and I had one other announcement. I'm doing a special interview on Tuesday night with Jim Fetzer on RBN Network, Republic Broadcasting, and that is about the 9/11 Vancouver conference and my research, and that should be an interesting show Tuesday evening on 10 o'clock on the Rick Adams Show. And then our next show through Zero Point Radio, we're going to have Jim Fetzer on for the first hour. And I'm hoping Dee will be lining up another guest for the second hour. So that's a little bit of our plans, and I'll review some of what I said and discuss it at the end of the show. But we'll move ahead. People, I'm going to try to revise my website at zeropoint.ca and invite people. I'll try to keep my activities up posted there a little bit. Okay, so from Toronto, Ontario, hi Dee, sorry Dee, I'm needing to take some time a bit today to talk about my activities and schedule and such.
Well,
but welcome Dee.
As you should, and thank you Christopher, you should be telling people what you do because most people don't know the extent of what you do. And it's, you know, it's going to be a really kind of an interesting time. You going to that conference and getting some perspective from out west is going to be very, very enlightening, I'm sure.
Yeah,
all of us.
Yeah, I'm hoping even as I go cross country, I might like talk to other Canadians across the way, and I invite people, anyone who would like to meet, or you know, if I can give a talk or anything like that along the way, I hope to do that.
Yeah,
even to get back to my spiritual teachings, which is my real passion.
And maybe even appear on a few other shows that emanate from out west that we all know and love, like Roadkill Radio. There's some people on that station that are really, really dedicated to some of the things that you and I both talk about all the time. And
yeah.
I think you'd make a great guest as well as a host.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, yeah. Yeah, so it'll be an interesting time. I think it'll be fun that having some kind of road shows. I'll be on the road, and we'll work some guests out, and hopefully we'll meet some additional people at the Vancouver conference we might have on subsequently as guests. But you've certainly lined an interesting and important guest on today, Deed. So maybe you'd like to give a bit of Shelley Ann's background, and we'll bring her on, and she's got quite a tale to tell.
Oh, Shelley Ann Clark is just, she's a Canadian heroine, and there's no question about it. Shelley Ann has been a whistleblower since 1989, the time of the original free trade agreement between Canada and the United States, as distinguished from NAFTA, which is another agreement which includes Mexico. This agreement is strictly between Canada and the U.S., Shelley Ann was the executive assistant to the fellow who was the number three man on the Canadian negotiation team. And the skullduggery that went on during this, and the fact that no Canadian, aside from Shelley and the internal people who devised this mess, nobody has seen this agreement. And now the original agreement is in a bunker north of Ottawa, known as the Diefenbaker Bunker, and this, they've declared it to be a matter of national security. And I'd like to know exactly, you know, what kind of national security there is involved in a trade agreement that's been in existence since 1988.
Probably
the whole thing
for them,
is just unbelievable.
Probably so, for them to hide their crimes. I think that's
exactly
why these things are
which is where Shelley Ann comes in, because Shelley Ann, despite being threatened and abused and exiled and treated like, forgive me, crap, okay, treated like crap by her own country, okay, this woman is still out there fighting for you and me and every other Canadian. So I think, personally, that she is a real Canadian heroine, and I think she ought to be honored as such. But as things are proceeding, what we're seeing is that the government is clamping down more and more and more in terms of information to the Canadian public. And if it were not for people like Shelley Ann Clark, none of us would get illuminated as to any of these details. So with that said, here she is, the blockbuster herself, Shelley Ann Clark. Welcome, Shelley.
Thank you, Dee. That was quite an introduction.
Well, it's a true one, my dear. I mean, we're introducing with your performance here today the launch of your book, The Sale of a Country, which I have read and reviewed for you, and I'm telling you, I've told a lot of people, every Canadian should read this book. Every Canadian should read this book. If that doesn't put the cherry on the sundae, I don't know what will.
You're quite right on that, because when I read your review, and you titled it so appropriately, Whistleblowing on Deaf Ears. Well, why is it whistleblowing on deaf ears? And that's what I wanted to address, because the book gives Canadians an actual checklist of what has happened since 1988, since 1987, when this agreement was signed. The reason why I'm whistleblowing on deaf ears is because free trade opens the door to a one-world government. Back in 1988, those words were never used in government anywhere. I mean, those words were complete taboo. since 1988. The first time that it came out in government to use a one-world government was when the senior management at the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade were ordered to read a book which was written by Oxford University and published by them. And that book is titled Our Global Neighborhood. Now, if Canadians dare mention the words Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement to the mainstream media, you know what they will be told? And I quote, because I've heard them say it to me, this is old news. It's water under the bridge. But I want to forewarn Canadians not to be fooled by these words. The free trade agreement between Canada and the U.S. of America that was signed minutes before the deadline of October 3, 1986, is very much alive and flowing. It contains the first necessary steps in preparation for a one-world government. This one-world government would be divided into global neighborhoods. The North American region, the European region, and the Asian-Pacific region. These regions make up the Trilateral Commission. Now, the Trilateral Commission was founded in 1973, 13 years prior to the launch of the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Negotiations. Free trade opens the door to the idea of a one-world government. The leaders use it as the tool they hide behind. So Dr. Holmes was perfectly right when he said, well, they hid the agreement, the actual agreement, and it's a threat to national security, is because they're hiding the contents to hide what they have really negotiated and given, how they've given our country away. You read about the deal that Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper has just cut with China, for example. It involves their high-tech resources. Well, if you go on to Google and check out Bill C-51, you will find out that Bill C-51 gives the people the right to be arrested if they use any hate propaganda or even mention that they are against a particular group of people. And it also gives them the right to use it as a spook system. China has obviously developed a very high technology for reasons of spying. Now, this Bill C-51, we're dealing with a document here that I read about, Chinese firms' Canadian contracts raise security fears. And they should raise security fears. Just about a few weeks ago, I was searching for accommodation here in Ottawa, and we went to a building, my PR agent and I went to a building, and on top of that building, you would not believe it was like a landing pad. There was all these a major big antenna, and then about 100 smaller ones all on the roof of the building. At first, we thought that it was just, you know, to deal with microwave situations and TV and all that. So when we went into the building and spoke to the person, the rental agent, and asked her point blank, what are all those antennas for? She told us that she was not allowed to tell us because she had been told that it was top secret and nobody must know why they were there.
Lovely.
So, you know, that is just one example.
Well, I just got a document this week, Shelley Ann, that came from the United States, and it was part of some information produced by the Congressional Review Service, which is lawyers attached to Congress.
That's
and
right,
and these guys did a report on the use of a smart grid and
That's
all
right.
of the privacy concerns. Now, you know, just off the top of my head, I would be thinking that, you know, what was on top of the building you're referring to is also part of smart grid technology, which is all about spying on the Canadian public and the American public and anybody else's public.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, because the woman did mention that it was, and we said, why did they tell you that you could not tell anyone? Is there a health hazard? Because we were very concerned that there would be a health hazard in that building. And she said, no, I was just told that it was a matter of national security. So there you go. That confirmed it for me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And now we have another piece of legislation coming up. I don't know much about it, but now they're saying that you can go to jail if you happen to mention that livestock-type product, like fish farms, et cetera, might be infected with a virus or have some kind of problem like that. If you even say that, you can be arrested. I mean, why in the flying blue blazes would they ever lock down information like that? Clearly, if there's a problem with our food stocks, then Canadians have the right to be told, don't they? Don't we have the right to know?
Well, yes.
Well,
we should have the right
going?
To be told. But I have an answer to that. I read Our Global Neighborhood, and the goal of these people that want to lead this one-world government, their goal is to totally eliminate the middle class.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that is the goal, and it was there in black and white in that book. And you take away the middle class, and you are left with a society of kings and serfs. And that's
Welcome
what they
to
want to go back to.
Yes, yes. It's feudalism.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what a better way than to get rid of the middle class, because the middle class doesn't have the money to go and buy foods in a specialty store. We have to buy food at the regular stores wherever it says, you know, no name, or anything that, you know, that comes from China is cheaper.
Yep,
and
exactly.
I
then
was
then
set.
There's a new bill, sorry to interrupt, but the new bill on the tightening the rules on unemployment insurance.
Yes, okay. I read about that too.
And now what you see there is you see the government ordering people who may have been in jobs where they knew in advance they would work for a year and then they wouldn't have to go back on EI. Okay, but they're criminalizing these people to the point of saying you have to apply for any job. So in other words,
oh, yes.
people with skills
mm-hmm.
and degrees are going to be wound up working at McDonald's for minimum wage. How do you raise a family of four on minimum wage when you're used to $30 an hour? How do you do that?
Well, exactly, exactly. So you see how they're eliminating the middle class?
Oh, it gets, yeah,
I mean,
it gets
right
better.
Under
it
our noses.
It gets better.
I mean,
you know what I found out this afternoon, this very afternoon? That they have been draining
what?
The employment insurance program for many years because it operates at a huge surplus. And because they said that, you know, they had to reduce the deficit, so they started draining the EI account. Now, that department continues to operate at a surplus, and they're tightening our belts again. Not theirs, ours.
Of course.
And this I found
of
out
course.
Today. So I'm
I mean, that's why, you know, the what I was saying way back when I first blew the whistle on the free trade, I was telling people that this was their plan, was to eliminate the middle class and how they were going to do it. And so many people just refused to believe me because there was no evidence of it at that time. But now anyone who reads the newspaper, who listens to the news and pays attention, anyone who will read my book, my book is like a list of everything that has gone wrong, you know, with the system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the system is no longer for the middle class people. It is a system that will look after the serfs, which means, of course, servants, at very minimum wages. And it will look, of course, they will look after themselves. And now the proof is out there. That's what I want Canadians to know, is that now you don't have to say, well, is Shelley-Ann Clark exaggerating? You know, is she making this up? They now have the proof. It is out there. It's in the news. It's everywhere.
Yes, and do you know what? I sent out a promo last night promoting this show and your appearance on it, and I got a response from out in on Vancouver Island from a lady who heard you speak about 15 years ago.
Yes, that would be right, yeah.
And out in Duncan, okay?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did give a speech in Duncan. Actually, I was on radio in Duncan.
Yes, well, she listened to you then, and she said, you know, it sounded plausible, but none of us wanted to believe it. She says, now we know it's all true.
Oh,
I got
thank
that
God.
Today. So, you know, your words have had impact. Just, you know, just so you know, 15 years ago, people are remembering what you said.
Well, that I am very proud. I am so proud that they have bothered to let you know that they have listened and remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well,
that's the only thing
that
can save us is if we can get together and do something about it.
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, this lady is an educator to start with, and I'm very, very pleased for her to have a grip on it and to say, 15 years ago, I heard this, and now I know it's true. Well, when she knows something is true, that means she can advocate for it.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
She
could, you know, she's the type of person that could organize in her own area on Vancouver Island, because the whole country, you know, people, all the middle class in this country would have to get together, you know, to change things around. Otherwise,
well, this is
1,000 people won't do it.
No, they
you know,
won't.
It would really take 1 million
see, this is what,
to be successful.
What I'm finding interesting is that it is now becoming very, very plain and obvious as the nose on your face that this is not just about any particular right or freedom. This is about all our freedoms. This is not just health freedom or economic freedom or any other freedom. They're all in the same bag. They're all being
yes.
grabbed up together, and we're being squeezed. So the point that I would make is you are now talking about the most important issue, and the one that I feel, and from what I've run into, this is their hot button. This is, as you said earlier, this is their secret. This is how they do it. Because we never knew the mechanism by which anybody in the world would agree to a world government. Well, as it turns out, through the trade affiliations which produce international obligations, which Harper mentions all the time.
Exactly.
And you can
exactly.
read that as enforceable legal international law contract, which supersedes every single one of our laws, including our Constitution. And then people wonder, well, how come government isn't listening to us? and in many cases, they can't. They can't. They simply can't. They'd be, you know, basically violating international contracts. And,
exactly.
And they're under all kinds of pressure to shut their mouths. Just like this woman in the building you mentioned, shut your mouth. It's not your concern. Well, yes, it is. Yes,
well,
it is.
Well, exactly. It's everyone's concern. Everyone should really be seriously concerned, because just so last week I was reading up on our health system, because that was a big deal inside the Free Trade Office, was the harmonization of our health system.
Yes.
And the gentleman that was the negotiator dealing with that aspect, you have no idea what they put him through, because he was refusing to agree to the terms of the Americans. And now our health system is being harmonized with foreign countries, not with just with the U.S. And I will quote what I read in a newspaper article. It was titled, "Health Coverage to Stay, United Nations Told." One quote says it all. Canada has long been a supporter of universal health coverage. And that was the headline of the article, is that Canada has been a long-term supporter of universal health coverage. And that's what this poor gentleman was fighting in for at the free trade office.
Yes,
I remember it was really a real big fight because he did not want to harmonize our system, but they had to harmonize with the U.S. to open the doors to harmonize free trade and health. And, you know, everything is being harmonized with all the different countries.
Yes, and I think that now would be an appropriate time to mention what is on the World Trade Organization's website. Because, of course, the WTO is like the mother of all trade groups right now. And what they say under the section of sovereignty is that people need to realize that a trade agreement is an international version of a contract, and it is
yes.
enforceable under law. It says, by virtue of reaping the benefits of joining, of being members of the group, nations must agree to govern their sovereignty according to the wishes of the group. Now, what that means is that all domestic law is subject to supervision and adjustment by foreign bodies sitting somewhere. We didn't elect them. We don't know who they are, but they're deciding what our laws can be, which takes the teeth right out of our parliament.
Well, how true that is. I mean, we lost our country and any power that we had when they saw, when Canada signed that free trade agreement back in 1987.
Yes,
I mean,
and you were witness
it was,
to it. And look at what you went through.
Why do you think they hid it?
Well, of course. What would you hide? Something good?
Well, exactly.
You know,
the like I say in the book, you know, they when I went around and I crossed this country and told everyone that they had done this, that the free trade agreement had been hidden, and that nobody, that Canadians had not seen the real deal. Well, what happened? The first thing that happened is that when I got back home from my cross-country tour, there was a full-page ad in the Ottawa Citizen inviting all Canadians to the library, the Archives Canada library that's here in the capital city in Ottawa, inviting them to go and view the free trade agreement. So I took, I was running, this was in 1993, it was when I was running to be a member of parliament in the federal elections. So my campaign manager and I immediately jumped into the car and ran to the archives building to see, because we couldn't believe it. They said, my God, they're going to show the free trade agreement, even the outline, which you could tell there was, you know, things were wrong with the outline. And when we arrived in the building, in the main lobby, on the ground floor, in the main lobby, right in the middle of the lobby was a glass casing. And when we went to it, propped up on a stand was the cover page of the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. And that was it.
So we know
that's what they went and told
to
Canadians to come and view was the cover page. None of what was inside, none of the other pages that contained the outline of the agreement was there.
Now, that is the definition of limited hangout.
Well, talk about audacity to put out a full-page ad in our main newspaper advertising that Canadians could come and see the free trade agreement for themselves.
Yeah,
and they showed
them
the cover page.
Like Joseph Goebbels said, he said, how fortunate for the governors that the governed do not think.
Oh, God, how well put.
Yes,
that is really well put.
Well put indeed. And that came from Hitler's propaganda chief, Joseph Goebbels. So they knew what they are doing, and obviously our government thinks we're stupid enough to think that seeing that a document actually exists is proof enough of the contents.
Well, yes. You know, they are controlling so much. Do you know that there was a time when the middle-class person who could not afford a lawyer, because lawyers are very expensive, that today, unless you have committed a horrific crime like murdering someone, legal aid is only available for persons that are on welfare.
That's right.
So there goes your kings and your serfs again.
Yes, and
on top right
of that,
there.
75% of the applications for appeals under legal aid are outright refused just right off
top.
Right off the
top. We were told, you know what I was told? I was told that because I was trying to get someone to represent me when I filed against the government with the Canadian Human Rights Commission,
mm-hmm.
and I was told that don't feel bad because even people that work at McDonald's do not qualify.
Exactly.
And that came right out of their office.
Yeah, well, you
that
know,
even people working
people,
at McDonald's did not qualify for legal aid.
Yeah, because you've got an income. And you know, how are you supposed to, on $10 an hour or less, depending on where you live,
yes.
How are you supposed to pay a lawyer who's charging you at a bare minimum $180 an hour?
That's right.
You know,
so you
I
see
mean,
how it, everything that, that we're going to be talking about today, it all reverts back to this one world government that only wants kings and serfs.
Well, you know,
that's what they're achieving one piece at a time.
Yeah.
And one thing I wanted to bring up, Dee, is that when they invented or they suddenly created the word de novo when it came to my case that I filed against the government at the Canadian Human Rights Commission, as you know, I filed the complaint with them. They, in turn, appointed an investigator. That investigator handed in his report after investigating for a year and a half. He handed in his report, and the report recommended that I had a case and that it had to go to the Human Rights Tribunal. Well, at the tribunal, it's quite another story, and I was really counseled, you know, to get a lawyer. But, you know, Dee, a lawyer would have made no difference. And this is the reason why. And people should write down the two names that I'm going to mention here because it's going to happen to them. By declaring, the investigation report was the key document that had all the evidence against the government people that I was filing against. It had absolute, undisputable evidence. So what did they do? The Federal Department of Justice declared the document de novo. De novo meaning it never existed, it doesn't exist, it didn't happen. And the minute they took away that document, the case was lost, even if I'd had 10 lawyers. Now, from there, I decided to file the complaint to what we have. The Harper government created a department that's called the Public Sector Integrity Commissioner's Office.
Mm-hmm.
And this integrity commissioner is appointed by the Prime Minister.
Oh, there's,
and
a,
he's
there's
supposed...
a bucket of integrity if there ever was one.
Well, you know, everybody believed that this integrity commissioner would report on the Prime Minister and any wrongdoings that would be done there or any wrongdoings that had been done by the federal government.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I laid out...
And what did we dream the next night, Shelly-Ann?
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, I gave them a binder, and my report was an evidence amounted to almost 1,000 pages.
Uh-huh.
At the end of 8 months, I received a letter from the Integrity Commissioner's office, and you should hear the excuses used not to investigate my case. They invented new laws not to investigate it.
Well, of course they did.
Yeah, because I'll read you one little part here, just to show you, to prove to you. The letter is dated Public Sector Integrity Commissioner, March 28, 2012. On June 6, 2011, you filed a disclosure of wrongdoing with this office in relation to incidents that occurred during your past employment with the Federal Public Service. You specifically cited events that happened when you were an employee of the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade, and later when you were employed by the Public Service Commission. You state that there were numerous wrongdoings committed during the period of time in which you worked in the public service. My office examined the information and material that you provided under both the disclosure of wrongdoing and reprisal complaints provisions of the Public Servants Disclosure Protection Act. The Act, in brackets, as your allegations concern possible wrongdoings and reprisals taken against you. For this reason, we opened two files to deal with the subject matter of your submissions. I will address both matters, but then they have created acts that say that one act states, of course, that it's that I filed the complaint. It's too old. See, you allege that, and of course you know everything about that. But I want to give you if their answers. Based on the information that you have provided, it appears that all of the above-mentioned issues have been previously addressed through different complaints mechanisms throughout your service with the federal government. For example, you availed yourself of various dispute resolution options such as grievances or format complaints to other organizations. But that's the very reason I went to them, is because all these other avenues, you know, said that I that
through.
Nothing,
it,
there was no wrongdoings.
And isn't
and
that
they're telling me that
they
because I did address it with these other people, that they cannot address any of it.
Well, isn't that the reason they exist, though? Aren't they the head?
Yes.
You know, they're that's where the buck stops. And you
exactly.
Have to
that's where the buck
head.
Stops. That's
yeah.
why I went to them. I figured, well, since everything else, you know, had been controlled, and they always found that there had been no wrongdoings, never mind that I nearly died in Vienna, Austria, and the government made me sign a letter to be able to obtain my airline ticket to be on a special aircraft, because I couldn't even stand up, and they had to transport me directly to the Ottawa Civic Hospital. In order to obtain my ticket, they sent a messenger, and I was told that you either sign this letter stating that everything that's happened to you in Vienna, Austria, while on assignment, that the federal government had nothing to do with it, and if you don't sign it, you don't get your ticket.
Lovely.
And I was there with my two kids.
Lovely.
So it was either signing that they were not guilty or staying there and dying.
Indemnify us or stay there and rot.
Yeah. Because I had, by the time I reached the Civic Hospital in Ottawa, D, I had several friends that were waiting my arrival,
mm-hmm.
and they spoke to the doctors that examined me, and they were told that if I had been in Austria an additional 24 to 48 hours, they were giving me medication that was killing off my potassium levels.
Lovely.
And once your level reaches zero, you die.
Yeah.
And I was just 48 hours or 24 hours away from that.
Good.
So
Lord.
I would have died there in Vienna, and they would have said I just caught some bug or something, and I would have never been able, you know, to come out and let Canadians know what was going on with their government.
So Canadian mothers, if your child wants to apply for a job with the Foreign Service of the Canadian government, what should you say to them? I don't think it's a good place to work.
No, it's a very dangerous place to work, especially if they put you on assignments where, you know, they are doing wrongdoings to the country. Then
Which is
then you're in danger the whole time. I mean, that's why I tried to leave the Free Trade Office at one point under the advice of my physician because it was just too much. And I was not allowed to budge. I mean, Germain Denis, who was the negotiator doing all the dirty work for Mulroney, he told the human resources people at Foreign Affairs, you remove her here over my dead body. So I wasn't even allowed to go and get another job.
Yes.
And I had a letter.
That would be the same body he intended to gift you with.
Yes, exactly. You remember that one, eh?
Oh,
you remember
yeah. Well,
the chapter?
I mean, come on.
Yes.
This thing is a spy novel. You know,
this,
I mean, I read this book and I was at my jaw spent more time on the floor than it did attached to my upper jaw.
I can laugh about it now, but I tell you at the time, you know, I knew how dangerous he was, and because of what he was making me do, I realized the danger that I was in, and that's when I went to the second in command, Gordon Ritchie, who had nothing to do with all this. And he got me an offer from the International Monetary Fund in Washington, D.C.
Oh, now there's another upwardly mobile.
And there's another. When that offer came, I turned it down. I didn't accept it. I figured I was maybe even safer in my hometown with people around me.
They're bigger than our government. Our government kills people, but these guys kill countries.
Well, yes, how true. How true, because, and they do it so, you know, it keeps bringing me back to that building, you know. We've reported it to several places for them to investigate, but we don't know if they're going to do so. Because if you saw it, I mean, it was actually scary. I thought I had stepped into some kind of movie scene or something.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a number of buildings in the city of Toronto like that, and there's increasing frequency of spotting these new cell towers. They look like cell sender towers and all this. The entire Toronto area is a Wi-Fi grid.
Wow.
And, of course, we know some health concerns.
Isn't that awful?
We had Una St. Clair on our last show from Citizens for Safe Technology and also Jerry Day from FreedomTaker.com. And these guys, they're telling us the goods on, you know, what's being pumped into the general population. Now we're going back to Agenda 21, aren't we?
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is exactly where we go, and this is a UN document that advocates exactly what you're talking about, the eradication of the middle class.
Oh,
as well as
I mean,
a lot of other lower class. I mean, they want to reduce the population
Well, they're making the middle class the lower class. We're not all, you know, as far as they're concerned, there ain't no class but them.
Exactly, exactly. You know, you're either a cert or you're one of them, which makes you the king because you have all the power.
Yeah, well, that's what
and
they think.
I mean, they want to turn our armed forces into blue berets that belong to the United Nations. I mean,
that hasn't
happened yet, but I'm sure there's a lot going on behind the scenes. Because
well, then you look
it was
at the Security and Prosperity Agreement, okay, whereby you have enforcement authorities from both countries enabled to work across border. So what is that? There's your trilateral commission starting to flex its paramilitary muscle.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah,
I mean, there, you know, I was looking, you know, at the members of the trilateral commission, and there's a lot of Canadians that I worked for that I did not know, even though I was their executive assistant, I did not know belonged to the Trilateral Commission. I just found out by doing some research on the website, and it brought me to the members. And, of course, they don't mention the three families that are ruling the world and have the power. They don't mention that at all. They just mention the 1,000 and some members from the various countries. And you'd be amazed at how many Canadians are on there. So, you know, that in itself is no wonder that, you know, we are in danger of being eliminated.
Oh, we're
and
we're
it's happening faster than we think.
We're being eliminated as we speak. It's I think
as we speak.
You know, we're way past being in danger. We're already being eliminated. And
well, yes, I agree with you that it has started in different ways. The microwaves that they're sending and the... I'll give you a very recent example that I thought I was going to die last winter. Last summer, out of blue, a young man, introduced himself to my public relations agent and told her that he wanted to meet me and wanted to be to help me out in any way. You know, he wanted to help out the cause. So Margaret, of course, brought him to my home and introduced me to him, and he offered to do my Skype interviews and set it all up for me, and he did 100 helpful things. But one day, he had asked me if he could come, and I said, no. I said, I have an appointment till 6 o'clock with this woman who says that she found a way. She is a doctor also, who is now retired, and she apparently has been studying this world problem that we're having for one world government. And she was telling me that, you know, she had heard my speeches and et cetera, et cetera, and I was the person to achieve the deed, that she had found a solution to stop the whole thing.
Yeah, would
so out of curiosity, of course, I went and met with her.
Yeah.
But what's important here is that I told this young man that I would not be back home to meet with him until 6:30. So I said, don't come before then because, you know, I'm not going to be there. And my computer, so I would have privacy and quiet, because I have two little grandchildren that usually visit me on weekends, I have my office set up in my master bedroom. So when I came home, I cut the meeting short with this woman, because what she was planning, I didn't want to be any party to. I didn't want any part of it. So I came home an hour earlier. When I arrived here at home, my sons greeted me at the door, and they told me that this young man was up in my bedroom. And I said, why did you let him go up there? Oh, well, mother, he wanted to, he had some stuff to do on the computer. When I arrived in the bedroom, my hard drive had been completely taken apart. My paperwork for my book was all over the place. He had taken my entire bedroom apart, like if he was searching for something.
Good Lord.
Yeah. That was our police at work.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Just out of curiosity, the woman that you met with, the retired doctor?
Yes.
Okay. Were her initials LG?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're
talking
about.
You did
now.
Say G?
Yeah.
Okay, if you said G, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Then you might. Yeah, I figured you would.
Yeah,
no.
I met her
and after an hour and a half, I decided to walk away.
Yeah, well, I did too, and I have to tell you, I was her last appointee. You're the person, she said. Okay?
Well, and then, you know what, Dee? I'm honored that she put me in the same basket as you.
Well, back at you, honey.
I feel totally honored.
back at you, honey, because I tell you, when you start adding these little dots up, you start to realize that the claws go deep. They go
very
deep.
I mean, it is really deep. What I'm amazed at is how everybody has asked me one question. They said, aren't you terrified? And I said, I have to admit that no, I'm not. And I don't know why I'm not. I said, I don't know, is there something wrong with me that I'm not terrified, or am I being helped from above So because I have a job to do.
You know what? I've asked myself the same question because people ask me, you know, you speak out. And Christopher, I'm sure you've been approached in the same way because of the things you talk about. I mean,
exactly.
You start getting some true spirituality down people's, you know, throats. And gee, a few things start happening inside their heads. That's something the government doesn't want. So all of us in our own way are doing something they don't like. And, you know, yeah, they say, aren't you afraid? Well, I'm more afraid. I think that the reason for doing it is we're more afraid of what will happen if we don't.
If we don't do it.
Yeah.
And it's being done also to those people who are monitoring us. Like,
yes.
Do they think they don't breathe the chemtrails? Do they think they don't get irradiated? Do they think that they're...
That they're exempt from it?
Exempt?
No,
yeah, they're
not.
Just pawns, and they mean nothing to these people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
That's why I think sometimes, like, all these intelligence agents and police who listen to truth networks, you know, maybe these guys get educated a bit. Maybe sometime they can be real police again and really serve Canadians instead of being part of this.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Dr. Hunt, that's a very interesting comment, because at Foreign Affairs, I must tell you that, you know, they have commissionaires at the door for security. And the commissionaires were obviously shown one of my videos where I was giving a speech out west, and that video traveled to the department like a bad rash.
Oh,
but, you know, after they saw that video, some of them came up to me and they said, we saw your video and we want you to know that when you leave the building, you tell us where you're going and how long you're going to be, because if you don't come back within a certain time, we're going to go out there and find you and save you.
Isn't that awesome?
So I had these commissionaires actually being very protective.
I mean,
so I felt so much safer.
Pray that we have some people of integrity at some level in our police and intelligence and military. I mean, everything
is so outrageous. These commissionaires were of the older generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the people who said, you know, we know we saw the video and we cannot thank you enough for doing what you did, and our way of saying thank you is to watch over you.
Yeah.
And I was so touched by that.
Yeah.
I was really touched. But to get back to my young man, because this leads to a very dangerous ending for me, is that I asked him what he was doing, and he told me, oh, I'm just reorganizing your stuff because you're so totally disorganized. So I left it at that. But over the next several months, I started getting really, really sick. Gradually, and every day, it would get worse and worse. And it reached a point where I couldn't get out of bed. I was so ill. Well, Margaret, my public relations agent, got really, really concerned, and she started contacting people across Canada and, you know, asking people what they thought it could be, because the doctors, when examined, the doctors could see nothing wrong. Well, the story comes about that there was something put into my hard drive that was... that had microwave chips or something, and it was killing me off slowly.
Goodness.
Lovely.
And you know that the minute we took away, so what we did is we threw out that hard drive, we went out and purchased another one, a brand new one, threw out that hard drive, and 7 weeks later, I got out of bed, and I was perfectly okay.
Wow. Now they're going to be able to put a smart meter on your house.
They have.
I know.
That's why you're
tell
mentioning
everybody
it.
Your experience with a smart meter, Shelley.
I tell you, I think that the worst part was the experience I had with that computer hard drive.
Yeah.
I mean,
terrible.
It took 7 weeks for me to be able to get out of bed.
Yeah,
I was out of function for all that time. So, you know, they're getting to me even inside my own house.
Yeah. Well, they can do that. They can do that.
Oh.
I mean, it's amazing how much they can pull off without you even turning a hair and realizing what's being done.
It's because, you know, and they always approach. They know that Margaret is, she's out there on the internet as my public relations agent on my website, and suddenly I received an email offering me to give a major speech at Ottawa University. And, of course, I jumped at the opportunity saying, oh, yes, because young minds are open, I'd be delighted to give a speech at Ottawa U. Well, that turned out into several suspicious meetings with the person organizing, who told me, well, you know, we've never heard you speak, really. We don't know if you can do the job right to speak at Ottawa U. Never mind that I spoke at McGill and many other universities. They were ignoring that completely. We have to do a test run. So we're going to rent a room somewhere before you go and do your thing at Ottawa University. At first, you know, I was suspicious, but I said nothing. I kept my mouth shut. The next thing you knew is that I was being questioned. We met with this chap, and he wanted to meet in a public place like our shopping mall. And the question that he asked was, in your book, Shelly-Ann, first of all, can you tell me, do you name names in the book? And I said, yes, I name names in the book. Well, then, and he left it at that. The following day, he contacted Margaret by email and asked her to meet him somewhere downtown and to bring her a copy of the book before it was even out and published. And that's
like
when we knew.
Right.
Yeah. He was another, and by doing some research, several people were able to get back to Margaret and confirm that he was an agent.
Yeah. They're everywhere, these slimy people.
In your book,
you know, what do you do in my case when I'm trying to get the word out, Dee? I'm trying to get the word out. So, of course, the natural thing to do is to say yes when you're offered to address a whole group of university students or address any meeting anywhere, because if you want to get the word out, that was my avenue. But now I say no.
No,
I will deal with people that I know, like yourself and you, Riley, you know, people that I know what they're doing, where they're coming from, and that they're on board. But accepting invitations from strangers to go and speak somewhere has really, two times in a row now I've been put in danger because of that.
Do you go through these adventures and your own life experience in your book? Is that part of your work? Or
will be in book number 2.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Which has already begun, by the way.
Excellent.
With the new computer hard drive, my health is back. And volume 2 of the series, because it's a series of 3. The first one, of course, is The Sale of a Country, and it talks about everything that's been sold in this country and what's happening to it. And Volume 2 is going to be Fighting Shadows. It's going to be the entire story of everything that they have done to me, that the government has done to me. The minutes of settlement that were signed between the Treasury Board Secretariat, Foreign Affairs, and myself. I mean, they had Treasury Board lawyers working on minutes of settlement when I took them to court through my union. And I will be dealing with those minutes of settlement and what happened in Vienna, Austria, what happened in Geneva, Switzerland. It was all different modes of attack, but all meant to finish me off. And all about the just us system. I mean, because in this country, and I want Canadians to take note of this, this is not just happening to me, the just us system. The just us system is set up not to help the middle class. And there are millions of us out there that are middle class, meaning you don't earn $1 million a year. And you're not poor. You're not on welfare. So we are the middle class, and the Just Us system has been set up not to help us in any way. And thousands and thousands of Canadians have lost their cases because they've had to represent themselves in a court of law.
Yes.
If they're, and others who can represent themselves, even if you are extremely as good as a lawyer, if your case has anything to do with something that the government doesn't want you to fight, then they will bring in the de novo system in.
Yes.
They will declare your document de novo. Never happened, never existed.
No, this would be
and,
a good time
And that's what
to
Canadians
mention.
Must remember. This whole justice system, they're not doing it just to me. They're doing it to everyone.
Everybody.
You don't know how many emails we received about people that are in serious trouble. Like, we have one of my former webmasters that was that created my first website, The Sword, My Battle for Canada. This gentleman had his own website, and he was stating, you know, how other nationalities were taking over our country. And because he said that on the website, he has now been arrested. And I'm sure, Dee, have heard of Doug Christie, that famous lawyer out west?
Yes, yes, and he's representing
Okay, well, Doug
Arthur
Christie
Topham.
Has apparently jumped in and is defending this gentleman free of charge.
Arthur Topham from Radical Press.
Yes.
Yeah, 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 he was arrested
That's the one
last
I'm talking
week.
About.
Yeah, he was
a nice
last
gentleman
week.
Who put things, you know, he's a... He tells the truth, but in a soft manner. He just gets the information out there. And he had just sent me, just before he got arrested, he had just sent me an email to thank me profusely for sending him a copy of the book.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I am so proud, Shelley Ann, that you did not give up despite all the roadblocks that were put in front of you while you were trying to publish it.
Yeah, well, that
because
was, that
Canadians
was my
have to be aware that
you know.
The, this American company, I thought that I would be safe with an American company, but every roadblock was put to stop it.
Well, you see,
until
you're speaking,
we threatened, until we hired an American lawyer to bring them to court.
Yeah,
then
well,
they
see,
started
Shelley,
to cave in.
Shelley, you're speaking internationally. You're talking about a global plan here.
Yes.
So, of course, wherever you go, there's going to be some opposition because the game is on everybody, not just Canada. And where you're
That's
standing right.
right
now is absolutely the... we're talking critical linchpins in what they're pulling off. And if people are aware of these critical linchpins, there's going to be hell to pay for these guys who have been trying to pull this off. Now, this might be a good time to mention something that I haven't even told you about. But on May the 9th, I sent an email to our Just Us minister,
yes.
Rob Nicholson, no relation, thank heavens.
Yes.
And I asked him in this letter, I said, Mr. Minister, you sent me an email about a year ago that got me upset. Because in that email, he said to me, you must remember your rights are subject to interpretation. And I said, wait a minute. So I asked him in this email, I said, you said our rights are subject to interpretation. And, you know, I was taught in school that it was the Supreme Court that interpreted our rights, and Parliament basically wrote the laws, and Supreme Court interprets. I said, when
yes.
did that change? You know, if the Supreme
What did he
Court,
say?
He hasn't said anything. But wait, it gets better. It gets better. You're going to love this. I'll have to send it to you. And
yes,
I haven't
please
made it
do.
Yeah, well, I haven't made it public yet too much because I wanted to give him a full 2 weeks to respond. Well, he's had his 2 weeks now. And,
okay.
Also sent it to all the party leaders as well. I've had no acknowledgement even of receipt of this email. And the questions that I asked started with, when are our rights being adjudicated and reinterpreted? By whom? Under which mandate? And when were you going to tell people? And if you told people and I missed it, please tell me when you did. And then on top of that, I said, would these reinterpretations of our rights have anything to do with international obligations via trade agreements, such as CETA, for example? And I said, if so, which rights are under consideration for reinterpretation? And when were you intending to tell the people of Canada about this? So all of these questions were in this email. And, of course, I haven't heard squat from the Just Us minister.
Oh, and you won't.
He answers it.
Or you'll get number 3 on their program, standard letter.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if he answers it, he's basically in a whole lot of legal trouble. If he doesn't answer it, he's in a whole lot of people trouble. So he can take his pick.
That's right.
He can take his
pick. Oh, I'm glad you put out those questions, Dee. That's fantastic.
They need answering, and I haven't had, like I said, and this is the part that's most disturbing to me, you would think that a real opposition in government would pick up on that, receiving that email and saying, holy smokes, we've got an avenue to nail the son of a gun.
No, okay. I wouldn't
well,
think
this
that
is it,
at all.
But they're not, no, the real, they're not the real opposition. It's
no.
All fake.
Well,
Beauclair,
he came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, he's the head of the NDP.
Oh,
well, do you think that he's truly, you know, the opposition when he was handpicked and put there?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
guy was handpicked and put there.
Is really that our government has been controlled for decades because our senior government figures have been attendees of the Bilderbergs and the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations and all of the roundtables and all organized under the Rothschild dynasties. I mean, our countries have really been hijacked for decades. I mean, what we're realizing now is this kind of systemic corruption that's infiltrated every aspect of our society. The justice,
yes.
The police, the military, the medical community, every aspect of our society has been degraded.
And Dr. Holmes, I mean, you're absolutely right that it has been going on for decades, but back then we did not have the technology that we have today they used to be able to control people finding out anything because there were no computers, there were no Facebooks, there was no internet.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can create your own website and you can let the world know.
Anything they don't put out on the media,
people still find out because of today's technology. So they've undone themselves with their own technology.
Yes,
but,
and even
you know,
Sun Tzu said in Art of War that to control a population, you control the information.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they would have to get rid of all the technology that we have.
Well, they're trying.
But that wouldn't help them to spy on us.
Yeah, well, they're trying to.
So they're in a catch-22. That's what I call it. They are in a catch-22 that if they got rid of all the technology, they wouldn't have the technology to spy on us because, you know, that like my computer hard drive had to be in place for that person to put the chip in that was doing me in. You know,
exactly.
It's as simple as that. And they, I'm sure they're listening to our phone conversation as we speak now.
Of course
I'm
they
sure
are.
They
but
are.
If they didn't have that high technology,
everything.
They couldn't do
our
it.
Our big, brave police services.
Yeah.
What gets me is what cowards they all are.
Yeah,
it's like people like us are seen as threats because we want justice or we believe in truth or concepts like that, old school concepts. You know, democracy, and we run up against a government which has been under the control of a criminal cabal for decades,
and now the people that have the money are the people that have the power, and you're controlled. I mean, the minute somebody invests in you financially, you're no longer your own person.
Exactly.
And that's the shame of it all. And those people who make it to the top have been heavily financed for a reason.
Selected.
They're handpicked.
Compromised.
we're, you know, you got the job because of us, and now you do as you're told.
Yeah.
And do they care? No, because they're protected and they live a good life. They have all the money in the world. And who cares about the rest of the country is starving?
No, we're just the useless eaters, moo moo. You know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's one thing that was mentioned in our global neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And that is that we are consuming too much food that's needed elsewhere.
Uh-huh. And of course, Yes.
Dee, I wanted to ask you if it was possible before my time comes up, because Dr. Holmes has some things he needs to say also, and I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Would it be possible for me to? I have put together an open letter to the Prime Minister of Canada, which is chapter 28 in my book.
Yes.
But for those people, you know, a lot of people don't have my book, but I would like to read that open letter so that Canadians know what's going on and actually make a checklist.
Good.
Please do. It would be honored to have you read it.
Yeah, it's a good one. But after that, Shelley Ann, can we talk about the water issue?
Yes, certainly.
Great.
It won't take long because it's not that long, but it's an open letter that I did it as an open letter so that people can use it. They can send me an email and I'll send them a copy of it. And if they want to send it to the Prime Minister, they're all welcome to.
Awesome.
So here it is.
Yep. Please, Shelley.
An open letter to the Prime Minister of Canada.
Shelley. Please don't feel rushed. We have a good half hour with you still. So please, let's begin again from the top of the letter, and I'm going to shut up here. Okay, thanks.
Okay. An open letter to the Prime Minister of Canada. Mr. Prime Minister, we, the people of Canada, whose origins began in this country, reject your vision for our country. We have assembled across this country to resist your efforts of forever changing our Constitution and undermining our freedom. It is obvious that you are not hearing us, since you have not acknowledged our message. Former U.S. President Wilson once said, "A leader's ear must ring with the voices of the people." The time has now come for you to lean over and listen to what the people of this great country of ours need you to hear. Our greatest treasure is our freedom. We no longer want to have our hands tied. We want the ability to think and act without the restraints that have been imposed upon us. A natural result of freedom is individual responsibility. We believe in the power of individuals. Our soldiers went to war and many gave their lives so that we would have a free Canada. It is unfortunate that work is not finished, yet you continue to lead us, the people of Canada, deeper and deeper into your vortex where you believe that we will never be able to get out. Mr. Prime Minister, you are wrong. We shall prevail and we shall win back our freedom. Freedom is the capacity for self-determination, and we, the people of Canada, are determined. Freedom is not an entity. It is a condition, and conditions can change. Freedom can expand, but it can also shrink. You promised Canadians change when you took office, Mr. Prime Minister, but turning us into slaves is not the kind of change we wanted or will accept. We know that the New World Order has already put into effect a plan to eliminate the middle class and return us to a world where there exist only kings and serfs. You, Mr. Prime Minister, have expanded government, violated our Constitution, confounded our laws, seized private industry, destroyed jobs, perverted our economy, curtailed free speech, weakened our national security, and endangered our sovereignty. When you compromise Canada's cultural, legal, and economic institutions, you ensured that our children would never have the same quality of life that we enjoyed in the past. Through generational theft, you are robbing the unborn of opportunities that they are entitled to because they were born Canadians. This is not acceptable, not in Canada. We accept the challenge, and we will be assembling across Canada to deliver our message as often and in every way we can. Mr. Prime Minister, we have taken a vow that we, as a proud Canadian nation, will resist your coercive style of governing. Patriots will not stand silent as you attempt to dismantle what we believe to be the greatest nation on earth. We will protect Canada, and its outstanding and rare qualities will prevail. Sincerely, we, the people of Canada.
Insert thunderous applause here.
Wow.
Now that's a piece of work.
And well, people... I tell you, I shiver every time I read it.
Well,
I put
true.
This letter together with tears because we could have such a wonderful, wonderful country if people would only unite and pull together.
And planet, because every country on Earth is facing exactly the same problem that we're facing. Their governments have been usurped by this shadow government representing
the international
banks. Well, did you
hear about what happened to London in England? They have been totally... A friend of mine went to travel and spent several weeks in London. And when she got lost and tried to get instructions back to her hotel, she could not find one English person to answer her question. Everyone was from a different nationality. And that's what's happened in London, England. You don't find English people there anymore.
Yeah, welcome to the call center.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where they say, hello, my name is Stephen. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I know the call centers are... Well, you know that at my publishers, I was... The only people that were English were the people that were the president and the vice president and the managers of each section. All the workers, that's why, and they kept using them as an excuse. They would send out they gave you a form so that you could take note on what page and what line number the mistake and how it was reading and how it should read. And I went through my book, and they landed up with 20 pages of this stuff.
Yeah.
And do you know that they could not read the instructions I was giving them?
Oh, dear.
And I'm one of my expertise areas is as a writer. At Foreign Affairs, I used to write correspondence for the minister's signature, because I'm always very detailed and precise, and I've always been complimented for the ease that I present. And not one of these workers were able to decipher what I was asking for. And it was simple.
Yeah.
You know, replacing a word with one word, delete this word and replace it with that word.
Uh-huh. And then
Simple,
we have on top of that the deliberate dumbing down in our education system, where kids are graduating from high school and they're unable to read. You know,
isn't it awful?
It is horrible.
I mean,
and then you have, you know, videos going viral of young blonde women going 60 miles an hour. She doesn't understand the concept of miles per hour. And that video was viewed by 6 million people in about 3 days. And then some other blonde does a YouTube video defending the dumb blonde in the first one and sounds...
This is
what is walking around inheriting this mess of a place. I'm going, you know what? They have been dumbed down to the point where they will do anything they are told. And they will accept any limitation that is put upon them because they don't know that they have the capacity for more. It's the most pathetic thing I've ever seen. And yet, in the midst of these kids, you find the odd one who's just naturally rebellious and has it together. And so, oh, my God, we've got to protect them.
Well, you they're know, making but, the universities, well, as you've been seeing on TV, I'm sure, Dee, is what the Montreal University students are doing because of the raise in their fees. And in Ontario, the fees are even higher than in Quebec.
Yes. Yeah.
So how is the average middle-class, bright young person, how can they go and get a degree?
Well, in the first place, their parents can't afford to pay for it, so they're forced to go and apply for government grants. Well, the government grants aren't grants. They're loans, student loans.
They're loans, and they pay for it most of their lives.
And you know what? Where there is a statute of limitations on debts everywhere else in the world on everything, the one thing they can nail you for is taxes and student loans. They are exempt from the statute of limitations. So out comes your new fresh graduate, all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and wearing the board, and they walk into a situation where their wages are not guaranteed, their degree is not guaranteed, and on top of all of that, okay, the unemployment is staggering amongst these kids. The employment to the skill level of these students is appalling. And then on top of that, they're saddled with student loans that they will pay forever. You know?
It puts them in debt for life, if you ask me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you know that I saw in government, young women that had university degrees and had to take a job as a junior secretary at minimum wage with a university degree.
It's that bad. The BA is the new high school.
The BA is the new high school, so they have to go and get their master's, or they have nothing.
They have nothing.
Because,
my last job
was assisting Canadians who applied to work at the United Nations, and I had to identify the best Canadians that would win a spot at the UN so that Canada would have a bigger representation. That was my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, people with a master's did not meet the requirements to get a job at the UN.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people that I had to choose from had to have at least one or two,
from
BA to master's to doctorate. They had to have doctorates in several areas.
Mm-hmm.
I helped some of them, even the ones that had doctorates in three different areas, if they wanted a particular job. I remember a woman that wanted a job at the UN, being the director for environmental disasters. She wanted to be the one that would put together the teams, you know, that went out when there was a major disaster anywhere in the world. And despite all her education in that topic area, I still had to get an expert at foreign affairs to actually coach her for 1 month before she could apply for the job.
Oh, my God.
I'm not kidding. And now, did you know that at the Department of Foreign Affairs, to become a diplomat, each year in the fall, there's a recruitment that goes on around the world to recruit people. 6,000 people apply. Then they do a first screening, which brings it down to 2,000. From 2,000 to 100, And out of 100, two are chosen.
Oh, wow.
And those two that are chosen, Dr. Holmes and Dee, the two that are chosen enter a program to learn how to cope overseas and be a diplomat. It's a five-year program, and during those 5 years, they were earning less than I was as an executive assistant. They were earning the salary of a secretary during those first 5 years.
Well, so they're practically paying for their
own training is so tough that some quit after 6 months, others quit after 1 year, and only one or two remained at the end that made it through all the tests. Because they send them out overseas.
They're all permanently bent over at the waist.
Oh, they are brainwashed and trained right from headquarters.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Terrible. Because if you saw what they have to go through, it is unbelievable. Myself and another individual, we put together the program, and we tried to fight for certain things that we didn't agree should be part of it. But we lost, of course. The department insisted that it be a certain way. And we laid out that program, and it's been in vogue since I left the department. I guess it was in 2001 I left Foreign Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was declared surplus in 2001.
Yeah, surplus to them.
There were 100 jobs available, but in their eyes, I suddenly didn't qualify for any of them.
Well, gee,
so I was declared surplus in 2001.
Surplus, if you're surplus,
so 1999 was when I was doing that program. So it's been in effect since 2000, that special program.
Yeah. Which raises
and they
question.
Are sent out. One girl filed a complaint. One woman filed a complaint. And she went to the newspapers, and they made her a front-page story where she was getting $30,000 a year, and she was having to work out in a field, in a tent, living in a tent, in the middle of the Bosnia War.
Oh, joy.
Wow.
She was paid $30,000 a year to work, to report to Foreign Affairs, and she was right in the middle of the war zone in a field, in a tent.
Oh, Lord.
Well, with no special,
what is Maude Barlow doing at the UN?
Did you say Maude Barlow?
Yeah, what is she doing with the UN?
Is she? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You're announcing something here.
Yeah, she's.
Were we going to discuss the water issues? Dee, you brought that up in show.
Oh, yes.
Let's do that.
Yeah, and let me.
Let's do that. You go ahead, Dee. This is your area of real interest.
Well, this is something I've gotten very concerned about over the last little while, and I have been corresponding with an Aboriginal journalist who has written a book, which I will, give more information on. And I've suggested that she and you, Shelly-Ann, exchange books, because I'll tell you, I got excited when I was looking through your book about that map that you show.
Yes.
That has
James
all the
Bay,
dams,
yes.
The proposed dams on the James Bay Aquifer, which services about 5 million people directly, and which in essence is all the water in our Canadian Shield is being transferred south through a series of diversion projects. Now, of course, the Aboriginal community is right in the middle of all of this. They're the ones who live out there. And let me tell you, you put your book and her book side by side, and it's enough to make your head explode. So getting the two of you together would be real interesting. But what we're seeing
Does she live here in Ottawa?
She's close.
Or is she in Toronto?
She's close. She's not far from you.
She's not far from me? Okay.
No, she's...
Because I would love to get together with her for sure and put our books side by side.
Oh,
I think it would be helpful to Canadians to understand the seriousness of the water situation.
Yeah, well, what people don't understand, as you pointed out, This happened with the free trade agreement that you typed up, that you have been whistleblowing about all these years. And, of course, under the Harper government, it's proceeding apace. They look to be putting this stuff together, you said, by 2015 in your book. When you look at it, that gives time for the De Beers Diamond Corporation, which is up there taking diamonds out of our ground, to finish their operations before they dam up the entire James Bay project and turn all the water that would normally flow north to flow south and southwest. And the maps that Keto Stanley has put in her book show exactly where the water is going to end up. And it's all southwest United States.
That's right.
It's going from across Canada. This is B.C. water war crimes. You've had 9 judges killed in B.C.
Yes, I was made aware. I was given a whole pile of information on this B.C. water crimes. And, oh, my God, they were giving me, you know what happened with that? Is that someone from B.C. Saw that when I was going to court, that the judge that was going to be sitting on my case was one Alan Nutzi. And that's when the people started sending me all this information on the BC war crimes and all the judges that had been killed, and that Alan Nutzi had not been killed, but he was part of the problem. And, oh my God, if you have him as a judge, you know, you better watch out and all this and that. So I went on air, I remember, with you, and I also put it on my website, for people to check out Alan Nutzi, that was going to be the judge in my case. But what they did is at the last second, they pulled him off the case and gave me a gentlewoman instead.
Oh, yeah, good, good.
Gentle, but still did what she was told.
Everything
I said, I was not allowed to say.
Yeah, well, you know, the bottom line that people need to realize, because you look at the courts right now, and you see that our, you know, our water's been sold, and people go in and they try and enforce their rights in that regard. People's water rights on their own land are being taken. And all of this stuff is going on, and we wonder, well, why aren't the courts listening? Well, the bottom line is that our Constitution is one of those domestic laws superseded by international agreements. So when Rob Nicholson said, your rights are subject to interpretation, what he truly meant, and this is what I'm trying to get him to say, which he probably never will, is that our rights are being determined by foreign bodies. Foreign agreements are ruling our Constitution. This is why George Bush called the U.S. Constitution, quote, a goddamn piece of paper, end quote.
Well, exactly.
And, so, and this has all been done by deception, incrementally and by deception, and it's really all forms of criminal racketeering. Like, I mean, I don't know what we can do to reverse the kind of situation we're in.
Well,
other
waking
than,
up would help.
Well, that's, you know, first.
Yeah. But, the problem that we're faced with, you know, that I've discovered by crossing the country and meeting Canadians face-to-face, is that I either enthuse them to join and you know, part of my audience says, oh, let's organize and let's do something about it. And the other half of the audience is scared to death. And then the leftovers are the non-believers.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are in what I call the comfort zone.
Yeah.
And there are too many people in the comfort zone, and that's why nobody is doing anything.
It also, Shelley, and I often quote J. Edgar Hoover, who says the individual is handicapped in coming face-to-face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. And
that's, I think,
is the situation of most people. And it is scary to wake up to it. And then it just unravels more and more what's been done in terms of the wars and the poisoning and the smart meters and Agenda 21. It is horrifying in a way, and the person does have to be, I say, upright of heart to face it and to try to have courage in the face of it all. But I think we do that for our love of our country and our families.
I guess we have been the chosen ones, yourself and me, and and many others have been the chosen ones to bring the message. But you see, that brings me back to my book. I can tell you that some of the people that I gave my book to, they're even afraid. I know they've read it because their curiosity would drive them to read it, but are no longer speaking to me.
Yeah.
I'm being ignored, and they won't even admit that they've read the book.
Yeah, because they're afraid to. They're afraid to.
I've scared them half to death. And and my book is nothing compared to, you know, if you add the other books to it, then it's really scary. No, it's
like,
true.
Well,
you know, if we add this lady that Dee is talking about, that I should put my book side by side with hers, imagine once they're side by side, how many people we're going to scare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a shame.
Canadians are going to have to wake up like they've been shocked out of bed with their fingernails holding them up to the ceiling. But that, you know what? At this point, too bad, so sad, kids. Too bad, so sad.
Yes, because you know what I had as a closing remark? I had written down, because I woke up with the thought in my head this morning. As I said, I've got to tell Canadians, we're supposed to be a distinct society, but we're not. We're becoming an extinct society.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I woke up with that in my head this morning. We're no longer a distinct society. We're becoming an extinct one.
Exactly.
It's that simple. And why? Because a lot of people react out of fear, so they shut their eyes and they believe that the problem is going to go away if they close their eyes and close off their ears and not listen.
Yep, that's all right.
You know, when Dee named the book review Whistleblowing on Deaf Ears, that was so appropriate.
Yeah,
it was
a
perfect
profound phrase.
Oh, I mean, Canadians are turning they're turning off their hearing because they feel that it's going to go away if they don't know about it.
That's right.
And that's
out
the problem
sight,
that we're
mind.
Faced with.
Yeah, out of
and
sight,
it's
out
not.
Of mind. And when you think about it, I'm looking around and I'm seeing young people having children. And as joyous an event as that is for a young family, at this point in time, you got to wonder, I mean, there's... You got to wonder, how is it that these people can be so oblivious that they can't see what they're giving as a life to these children they're producing?
I know.
I have two little grandsons.
Yeah, and I got one.
And I'm scared to death for them.
Yeah.
You know, but it pushes me to go on and trying to do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the unbelievable waste. Everything these people do is just such waste of taxpayers' money and all their programs, and they don't do anything to benefit the Canadians. Like, it would be so easy to turn our society around so quickly if you invested in farming and agriculture and gardening and manufacturing and did anything to help the people. But instead, we have a government that's been controlled by this group of psychopathic elites for the last 50 or 100 years.
Well, not only that, we have a government that is bringing in food that's poisonous, that's bad for us.
Yeah.
I will send you, Dee, and you can pass it on also to Dr. Holmes, is one Canadian man has gone through the trouble of going to the different countries where they're saying that our food is coming from. You know, when it says that it was manufactured in China or packaged in China, even if it was packaged in China, he went to all these different countries and he has written a fantastic report, and he's telling you what products to stay away from. Mm-hmm. Apparently, in one place that he went, I'm a fish lover, for example, mm-hmm. and the fish are being raised in cages, and they are being fed human excrement.
Wow.
Which carries all the diseases that are now showing up in people in Canada.
They swallow every day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because so many people,
you know, products,
are exposed.
Well, Highliner. Who doesn't know and how many years has Highliner been around?
Exactly.
I remember
and
it from,
the ones
from way
the
back.
Left of it.
And then they're spraying it from the sky with aluminum,
yes.
barium, strontium, carcinogenic matter. Spraying it from the sky, like the Gulliver's Travels, where the
right.
yahoos fly in the air and they throw their excrement down on people. That's what they think
I
about
know.
Their
it's
poor
just
little
awful.
Sheep. Yeah.
I mean, what do you expect? I mean, everything that they're telling you, there's so many things now that you shouldn't buy at the supermarket.
Yeah.
That when I send you the list, D, you're gonna wonder what the heck you're gonna eat.
Shelly-Ann,
it's that bad.
We do need to try to maybe take 5 minutes just to wind up a bit. But I did want to go back. What was the title or concept of the third book in your series?
Incomplete. The third book is going to be an autobiography.
Oh,
and
excellent.
It's going to be titled From Riches to Rags. And
wow.
The reason for that is that I was born in Ottawa's Embassy Row, Rockcliffe Park.
Oh, yeah.
And all of my life, until I blew the whistle, I lived as one of the wealthy of Ottawa.
Oh, yeah.
After I blew the whistle, I have lost everything. I had a home. I had a car. I had it all. I had I catered all my parties. I had live-in a live-in cook, and I had a live-in nanny to help with the children. And after I blew the whistle, piece by piece, everything was taken away from me. And in the end, when they made me so ill, I applied for years I'd been paying long-term disability insurance. The long-term disability insurance people refused to pay me my money, and when that didn't work, I applied for my pension early, and they delayed my pension by almost 2 years, which made me lose my home and my car and everything I had. So my third book is my entire life story from the day I was born to present day.
Oh,
and what I'm doing.
Wow. Well, that will be fascinating.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
I wasn't going to do it, but a lot of people who know me very well, they said, you know, you've got to write it.
Gotta.
Because
yeah.
I led an incredible life before I blew the whistle.
Yeah, well, I mean, writing about it now, given what information you hold for the good of the country, is de rigueur. This is not a choice.
You know,
I
wish I had the power. If I
want to
take a second here, is that I really wish I had the power that the Occupy Canada, the people that are occupying different parts of Canada to revolt against the system. They are so organized that I have to wonder. Who gave them the money to be that organized?
George Soros.
You know, who is paying them? I don't know if these people are genuine, but I wish that I could organize like they have that we could get things done.
As Dee says, it was George Soros came out to be one of the promoters of that, but I think in ways their movement didn't maintain completely under their control.
It's not under all of their control now.
Yeah, it's more complex.
But, listen, before we... sorry, Christopher. I just wanted to make sure that we did mention two things. First of all, your website... Okay, which is ShellyAnnClarkSpeaksOut.com, right?
Yes, that's right.
And also, where they can get your book. So
they can get my book by ordering it at orders@exlibris.com.
Now, exlibris.
They can order it online.
Yeah, orders@exlibris.com, and that spells the letter X. L I B RIS.com.
That's right.
And
dot com.
You can order it
and
there.
They can order it from there, and it will be shipped out to them. Because if they order it, if people want an autographed copy, they would have to write to H as in Harry, F as in finance, C as in corporation, 2420 Bank Street, Suite number 44, Ottawa, Ontario, postal code K1, B as in Victory, 8, S as in Sam, 1, Canada. But the difference is that if they order directly from Ex Libris, the Ex Libris is selling the book for $29.99, while if they ask to get an autographed copy, it would be $40 because it would include the shipping and handling of it from Ottawa here.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much, Shelly-Ann, for coming on, and I hope we'll have you back again in the future. And I hope you're giving a talk, I'd love to get out and hear your presentation.
Well, perhaps we can arrange that. We should really keep in touch because when you're in Ottawa, if we could set something up, that would be great.
Yeah,
I would love to meet you.
That would be awesome. And we'll also be paying attention to you on your That Channel interview, which is coming up on June 5th, right?
So, yes, on June 5th, I'm the first one on at 12 noon with you, Riley, on That Channel.
ThatChannel.com, people.
I'm going to be in Toronto in person for that.
Yes, and I get to meet you.
We get to meet. I sent you an email today saying, Dee, we're going to meet.
Dee,
where and when, because we're arriving on the 4th.
Yes, I know. I know where you're staying.
Yeah.
I know all of that. Margaret told me everything. So.
Oh, yes, Margaret's very good.
Yes, she is. And
she does a good job for her country, I tell you.
Fascinating to read your autobiography and hear more of your story.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating story. And thank you so much, Shelly-Ann, as Dee describes you as one of those Canadian heroines. And we're just lucky we've had some people brave of heart enough like you to stand forward. And, you know, you may have gone from riches to rags, but I think in a way you put your store up in heaven in terms of serving your soul life. And I think we're facing these soulless creatures who have done this to us in our country, sold us out in this way.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Dr. Holmes, and I thank you and Dee for having me on your show.
A pleasure.
And I'm looking forward to meeting you also.
Delighted to have you.
So next time you're in Ottawa, Dee can give you my phone number, and we can arrange to meet.
He is there. He's pretty close. He's in Canada.
I'm 40 minutes from Ottawa. I'm just
Dr. Holmes, call me anytime and we'll arrange to meet.
Well, I will when I'm heading off on my trip, which I'm going to
go from
June 1st to July. And in the summer, I'll give you a call, Shelly-Ann. I'd be honored
that
to
That would
meet
be
you.
Perfect.
Yeah,
yes,
great.
And we'll put you together with Jen Keto Stanley and get those books side by each. And we're going to have a lot to tell Canadians by the time Christopher's trip is over with. And, boy, is he going to come back with some stuff. So it's going to be pretty neat.
It's going to be very good. I'm so glad that he's able to do this. Yeah.
Well, that's try to bring a few people together to put on a big conference featuring a number of people like Shelly-Ann and other activists and try to bring people together from different causes. We're facing such a monster in what we're facing, and we just have to organize more.
Yes, these dots all have to be
connected. Well, Dr. Holmes, if you can organize such a conference, I will be delighted to help you in any way I can.
Well, we'll have to discuss it more, and we'll do that.
Okay.
We'll do that. Thanks, Shelly-Ann.
You're
welcome to stay on the line. Thank you, and we're going to take a few minutes here and just give out some other info on that. Thanks again, Shelly-Ann.
Thank you, Shelly. Okay.
Wow. Way to go, Dee. Thanks for getting Shelly-Ann on. She was an excellent guest.
Isn't she
had such
awesome?
An aura of kind of integrity and nobleness about her,
yeah,
I thought.
Isn't she awesome? I mean, the thing is that people don't realize what kind of a national treasure she is, and they need
yeah.
to.
Yeah,
you know,
and even to have faced, like, attempts on her life and then the intimidation she felt, eh?
Oh, yeah,
experience.
Well, like we were discussing earlier, we're hitting on their hot buttons now, and
yeah.
because we're hitting
yeah.
on their hot buttons, they're getting real squirmy.
Yeah.
You know, it seems they're the frog that's boiling slowly, and they're starting to get a blistered butt. Well, you know what? It looks good on them.
It sure does. I'd sure just love to. I pray to see justice reestablished again somehow on this planet. All the terrible crimes that have been committed against the populations. But there is hope in that there is a worldwide truth and awakening movement, and we're contributing to that, and as Shelly-Ann does. Dee, why don't you give out your web information just for your links to the, yeah, and
well,
information, and then I'll take the final couple minutes.
As people know, I'm the executive director of the National Health Federation of Canada. And our website, our international website, is www.thenhf.com. We have a Canadian section on that website. Our other website is under construction right now. But there's archives there. There's resources there of alternative healers and alternative health, all kinds of articles of interest for people to delve through there. So I highly recommend a visit. In the meantime, of course, you know, it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to come on air with you every couple of weeks and start talking about things I don't get to talk about necessarily through the NHF work. Because
yeah, we've certainly had some very eloquent guests and major
some
activists on the last week.
Awesome
weeks,
people.
And we'll just keep it up. And
you know, we had Kevin Annett on a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting that it's just coming out that the Pope's butler has been arrested, okay? The Pope's butler has been arrested for what's called now VatiLeaks, okay?
It's called what?
VatiLeaks, like WikiLeaks.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
no, VatiLeaks. Okay, so now you got the Pope's own butler is being scapegoated, and we know
yeah.
he's being scapegoated because some of the documents he leaked came from the Secretary of State, and he
yeah.
didn't have access to those documents. So there's more to it than meets the eye. The Vatican is imploding. It's getting real
good.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, so much. Well, the North Atlantic Terrorist Organization met in Chicago, and I didn't think they would perpetrate a terrorist act there. They just wanted to create fear around it.
Oh, they just showed
who's going to terrorize the terrorist organization?
Yeah, well, you know what? I would suggest that all of us, when confronted with these big show-off affairs where, you know, the national security and helicopters in the air and cops on the street and guns and cameras and everything else, I suggest that the next time there's a G20 anywhere or a G8 anywhere and people want to protest, that they point and laugh. Point
what?
And laugh at these people.
Oh, yeah.
Point and laugh at
well,
all
well, they'll
of
be
officers.
Attacked. I mean,
yes.
because it won't work because the police will have their racket. You know, they're provocateurs, and they always stage something so they can create a media show to persuade the little sheep that their government loves them.
I think it'd be real, really, really funny to see how people can actually act as provocateurs when they're the only ones wearing black, they're the only ones carrying sticks, and everybody else is laughing their butts off. Where
yeah.
do they think
well,
they're going to blend
right.
in? Where they
okay.
think they're going to blend in? You know, and as far as this new law in Quebec, you brought up the student thing in Quebec. Okay, there's a new law saying that if you have a group of more than 50 people, you have to register the event with the police and all this kind of yada yada.
I know, and huge
and saying,
fines for people.
Yeah, and huge fines.
To intimidate,
and
like $10,000
exactly.
or something.
Exactly.
Absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, well, if 50 is the magic number, then everybody form groups of 49 and raise the middle finger high.
We'll have to see where it all unfolds.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to mention again a few upcoming things. Dee and I'll be back in 2 weeks. In the first half, we're going to have Jim Fetzer, and Jim and I will be talking about the Vancouver 9/11 Truth Conference. And then I've asked Dee to maybe line someone up for the second half of that show. And then after that, I'll be on the road, and we're not sure yet. I may try to meet some interviewee out at the Vancouver conference. So we'll have some interesting shows coming up. If there's anyone across Canada who, between June 1st and July 8th, would be interested in meeting or having me give a talk anywhere along the way, I'd be interested in to meet up with other Canadians. And the other thing, if there are Canadian or Americans out there, I'm interested in little chemtrail videos. I want to put together a movie on the chemtrail poisoning of the citizens of Canada. And I'd really invite submissions. If anyone does some local chemtrail videoing and send me snippets from across Canada, I'm going to work at that when I return from Vancouver. And
that
the
should
other,
be fun.
The last event is I'm doing a special interview with Jim Fetzer on Rick Adams on Monday night on RBN Network. And, at 10 to 12 o'clock.
Okay, well, if you send me that information in an email, Christopher, I'll promote it through my avenues.
Great.
These are things that should be promoted. And unfortunately, with the Internet, one of the failings is that there's so much information, you just don't know where to start. So we.
I know, it's over. That's right, there's so much, yeah. Anyway, Dee, thanks, Dee. Another great show, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yes, and everybody remember, please, The Sale of a Country by Shelley Ann Clark. Order it at exlibris.com. You need to read it.